Blog Talk Radio.
Interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Welcome, friends, brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ, and seekers of the truth. But whoever you are, I know that we all share one thing in common. Don't we all want to know the truth? The truth about what's really going on here in this crazy, crazy world. So welcome to the 562nd edition of SDG, Sola Dea Gloria. And this message is titled 2022 Endgame Update Number 26. And then later in this message, after we tell you all the forbidden truth that the mainstream media will never tell you, we're going to tie it all into growing up. Yes, folks, growing up both spiritually and emotionally. You know, the Bible says that when we grow up, will no longer be immature like children. We won't be tossed and blown about by every wind of new teaching. And we will not be influenced when people try to trick us with lines so clever they sound like the truth. Instead, we will speak the truth in love, growing in every way more and more like Christ, who is the head of his body, the church. So I hope you stay tuned to learn how we can stop being duped by these liars in the media and government as we grow in every way more and more like Jesus Christ. Bottom line, folks, is that as believers, we may be in this world, but we are not of this world. We're just God's people passing through. So let's all refuse to be destroyed by this Luciferian all-out war on humanity and do as Jesus told us, to occupy until he returns. So be sure to stay tuned and find out the latest news that the mainstream media will never tell you as we dive deeper and deeper into America's new 9/11 events, which are unfolding in slow motion while on steroids. But remember, folks, like I say every week, and I've been saying since early in 2020, this all started with the lab-engineered, media-manipulated coronavirus heist. And as we do every week, folks, before we get into the news, let's look at something we talked about last week. So last week, we heard from this crazy health minister from one of the regions in Australia, the health minister of the New South Wales, Brad Hazard, referred to the unvaxxed people like you and me as crazy. So what I'd like to do right now, folks, is just remind you of the craziness that he said, and his name was Hazard. So I should be able to find it by the term hazard, and I don't, so I guess I have to type in Australian. Not there. You know, folks, this is one of the biggest frustrations on this board. Give me one second here. Yeah, here it is. So this is the Australian minister, Brad Hazard. He's the health minister of New South Wales, and he's saying that unless you're vaxxed three times, you are crazy.
The very important message that Dr. Chant and I are here to say today, and she'll give more detail, is if you haven't had your full doses, and most of the population know that you can have up to three doses, and then possibly four or even more if you're older and in certain circumstances with comorbidities, in other words, other serious illnesses, or perhaps you're immunocompromised. But if you've had two, for example, or one, and you haven't had your full three, put it bluntly, you're crazy. You should go and get them, because that is what's going to make a difference to stopping, or at least reducing, the chances of you ending up in hospital or ending up possibly dying. I can't stress this enough. I think there are some in the community who are just very busy. There are others in the community who think the pandemic's over. On both of those counts, they're wrong. So I would strongly encourage, I mean, I know I have friends who've said to me that they're fully dosed, and when I ask the question, they've had two doses of vaccine. And as a health minister, I quickly tell them, go and get your third dose. I would encourage everybody to be a mate to their mates in New South Wales, indeed across Australia. Ask, have you had your full three doses?
So, do you remember that craziness from last week? You and me are crazy, folks, but this isn't anything new. In fact, the vaccine hesitant, the anti-vaxxers, as we're called, the non-compliant, also known as critical thinkers, and didn't we do enough shows, enough content on what it means to critically think and not be swept into mass formation psychosis? So anyways, the critical thinkers out there like you and me, who simply refuse to go along, to get along, but instead want to see real evidence, real science, concrete proof concerning these experimental jabs, we've been maligned and disparaged for the past 2 years by the legacy media and the establishment minion, be they in government or be they in entertainment. So let's have a listen to this clip. And now some of these individual pieces we've played in the past. And there's one person in particular on here, and I'll talk about him a little later in the show. He's one of the late night talk show hosts, Stephen Colbert. Let's just straight out say it. Folks, he's a sovereign in the new Great Reset. He's a mouthpiece, a gatekeeper, establishment. Stephen Colbert, I'm calling you out. You are the Pied Piper of the normies, leading them to the slaughterhouse, folks. He's a Judas goat. But just listen to this. You're going to hear him in there. I think he opens it. And it's sad.
That if hospitals get any more overcrowded, they're going to have to make some very tough choices about who gets an ICU bed. That choice doesn't seem so tough to me. Vaccinated person having a heart attack? Yes, come right on in. We'll take care of you. Unvaccinated guy who gobbled horse goo? Rest in peace, Wheezy. You're
the people who are not getting vaccines, who are believing the lies on the internet instead of science, it's time to start shaming them.
Search every ravine, every crevice. But the fiend must be found.
As Christmas approaches, many of us will be faced with a new dilemma. How to handle unvaccinated loved ones and whether you should spend time with them over the festive season.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly hope that all of you are vaccinated. I wouldn't want to be in the room with lots of people who aren't vaccinated.
The risk posed to all of us by unvaccinated people, people get angry.
Jennifer Aniston is doubling down on cutting non-vaccinated people out of her life.
I surround myself and I'm surrounded with love and honor and certainly those that are vaccinated.
First Australian parents who are unvaccinated will be banned from seeing their own sick children in the state's hospitals. And people have had time, you know.
Yes.
I mean, really.
She says, the unvaccinated, I really want to piss them off. And so we're going to continue doing so until the end.
And just say, you now, it's mandatory to get vaccinated. F*** them, f*** their freedom. I want my freedom to live.
Being held accountable for your own actions isn't called discrimination. It's called being, you wouldn't believe it, a goddamn bloody adult.
Calling for anti-vaxxers to be stripped of Medicare.
Anger is building among parents and vaccinated teachers as governments start to allow unvaccinated people to return to work. What will happen?
The virus is literally finding unvaccinated people.
If you are unvaccinated, the virus will hunt you out.
Being called a pandemic among the unvaccinated.
Pandemic of the unvaccinated.
The vaccination of the unvaccinated.
I made a mistake there at the beginning. The clip opened with Jimmy Kimmel. I didn't see Kimmel on the sovereign list, but Stephen Colbert is on it, and we've played clips of him in the past, and perhaps I'll call up one of those clips later in the show when I cover the list of sovereigns that has just been released. But you know, folks, over the past 2 years, I've learned a lot about the true character of some of these quote-unquote celebrities and some of our trusted officials. This scamdemic has been a real eye-opener. It's an enlightening experience, to say the least. Won't you agree? Now, more on some of them and their sovereign status
little later in the show, like I said. But right now, it's time to get started with Alex's and Sister Kathy's Freaky Deaky News Update. And as always, folks, let's get started with the coronavirus heist. Sorry, folks, my mic was off. You know, we talked about throttling, and I had a really nice platform out there on Twitter back at the beginning of 2020. And when I posted that rap video and it was picked up by Sherry Tenpenny and then it went viral, I started to be throttled. And it was horrible, folks. I lost 95% of my followers. I had virtually no reach on any of my Twitter posts anymore. And that trend has continued. I see the throttling here on this platform. I see the throttling everywhere I go. So I encourage you to get the information out there, post the links, and just put a space between the various address points, or better yet, take a screen capture and put it up on the social media platforms. A lot of times the AI can't find it that way. And then what we can do is have the people that want to find it just close in those gaps and then go to the tiny URL or whatever other kind of link you may include. The point is we have to work around this throttling that's happening all over, but we have to keep moving. So you talk about hypocrisy and hubris by the leaderships. Folks, did you know that some of these very same people who have maligned and disparaged those of us who have refused these death jabs, those of us who are out there critically thinking, are now supposedly getting it again? Yeah.
What?
Yeah, Paul, exactly. You have to listen to these WEF indoctrinated Western leaders lie concerning telling us that, oh, the vaccine's safe. And have you noticed how the narrative has changed over the past 2 years? You know, it used to be if you take the jab, it's 99% effective, you won't get it. Then it was a progressive decrease in the efficacy. And then it's, oh, you won't get as sick. Oh, at least I had it. You know, I've seen memes out there, people on their tombstone, they put, these are just jokes, folks, but at least I got the jab, and they're dead. And then we've had the media people like Elton John telling us that it's safe.
It's really important to know that the vaccines have all been through and met the necessary safety and quality standards.
So there's this very good clip that came out, I think it was on Twitter this week, and I'd like to play it for you. And it's just a collection of some of the leaders of the Western nations. You know, the WEF indoctrinated mouthpieces for Klaus Schwab and the Luciferians. They're basically saying, get the jab and you won't get COVID. And then the next time you hear them, it'll either be them announcing, like for Trudeau and for Biden, or it'll be a newscaster identifying them and saying, oh, they just got COVID. Let's have a listen.
You're okay. You're not going to get COVID if you have these vaccinations.
Hey, folks, guess you heard. This morning I tested positive for COVID.
And when people are vaccinated, they can feel safe that they are not going to get infected.
Dr. Fauci says he has COVID again.
If you've done the right thing and gotten vaccinated, you deserve the freedom to be safe from COVID-19.
And this morning, I learned I tested positive for COVID-19 as well.
With three doses that you've been prevented, not just from serious illness, but from getting this virus, this Omicron variant, and therefore giving it to others.
Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews is in quarantine for 7 days after testing positive to COVID.
So I'm fully vaccinated. It gives me some comfort.
Anthony Albanese has just tested positive for coronavirus.
Having received two doses of AstraZeneca, it's a very effective vaccine, protection from symptomatic illness and therefore risk of transmission to others.
You're okay. You're not going to get COVID if you have.
You hear these liars, folks? Do you hear it? So I've been thinking about this, and this could be one of two things. Either the vaccine doesn't work, and this is just a good old-fashioned money grab by the establishment, and there's some rare side effects with the jab. Or number two, none of these woke Western leaders, you know, the WEF puppets, actually took the mRNA jab. They just took saline. So this falsely called vaccine, instead of getting it, they just took some salt water. A saline placebo, so to speak. And it still is a money play, a power play, the biggest of all time in recorded history. And the side effects are very dangerous and prolific enough to admit the leaders who are mostly on sovereign status and won't have to get the jabs in the future. Well, I take that second off. None of these leaders actually took the death jab. I don't believe they have. In fact, there's some videos out there showing that they were using those artificial syringes where the needle retracts into the body, the cylinder of the syringe. I think if they didn't use one of those, they all got saline. This is a money grab, a power play, and the side effects are so dangerous that it's part of their global depopulation agenda. Plus, like I said, and we're going to hear this later, many of them have sovereign status in the Great Reset, and they won't have to get any of these jabs. Now, even some of these Western leaders are beginning to admit that this is wrong, that it's not safe, that it's a crime against humanity. When you listen to this next short 17-second clip from the European Union Parliament member, Christine Anderson, and we've heard her before, comes right out and say, this is the biggest crime against humanity, this jab. Just have a listen here. In fact, I'll read the quote and then you listen. The vaccine campaign will go down as the biggest scandal in medical history. Moreover, it'll be known as the biggest crime committed on humanity.
This vaccine campaign, it will go down as the biggest scandal in medical history, and moreover, it will be known as the biggest crime ever committed on humanity.
What? What? Are you serious? Are you serious? Can I have some more coffee?
That's right, Paul. I'm serious, and so is Christine. You know, I didn't see Christine's name on that list of sovereigns. I wonder why. You know, folks, these medical communities have been so corrupted. Mike Adams, somebody who's questionable on that list, and we'll get into that a little bit later in the show, he actually talked about how corrupted medicine and the double-blind scientific method has become. It's all driven by money, and it isn't really driven by true science and the scientific method anymore. You know, folks, any of you who have been listening for a while know that I'm a classically trained PhD chemist, you know, using the old scientific method. I do experimental science. You know, I have to be able to recreate in the laboratory something that somebody else has done, or conversely, other people have to be able to create in the laboratory, or in the case of my current position in my factory, after I develop it, and it has to be done the same way, day in and day out. It has to be reproducible, and we call that product research and development, and then it becomes a product, and then it's made in countless millions of prototypes, and then it goes out and is manufactured into whatever. But I don't want to get off on that. The point I'm trying to make, folks, is that we have seen a vast corruption of the scientific method. So these medical communities, they've lost their reputation of trying to cure, and now they're actually becoming known as a means of injury, be it the respirators and the protocols used by the hospitals to treat these people that have been pathogenically infected or contaminated by this spike protein. And I think it is actually a nano weapon. Me, this link to this sci-fi channel on YouTube called Dust. And if you get a chance, go out and check it out. Nanotechnology, even on the particle size of a dust. They have these smart dust particles, and I believe that's what spike protein was, and I believe that's how I got infected. But we'll cover more of that in later shows. Right now, medical practices are helping the elite. People like Bill Gates. Oh, by the way, he's a sovereign in their attempt to reduce the population of the earth. Now, as for governments, they see this as a pathway to power, but little do they realize that after the Great Reset, they're going to be eliminated too, because the new establishment, the Luciferians, the elite, the movers and the shakers, they don't need these Western hacks that are running these quote-unquote democracies. They're going to use scientific technocracy, just like we saw in the third book in the Space Trilogy by C.S. Lewis. But we'll cover more about the technocracy later in the show and Back to the Future. You know, people, if you believe that the pharmaceutical companies, the doctors, the major media, and the Western governments are out for your best interest, you better get your head out of the sands, folks, because you're blind to the truth. They have so seriously tainted their reputation as they walked hand in hand together with the extra money bags, and they all came to the realization that they have to go along to get along. So now they're cashing in their big bags of cash at a 43-to-1 exchange ratio for the new CRSQ/SM digital money system. Oh, and as a side note, did you know that the Bill Gates Foundation literally funded the Novavax research to the tune of $15 million? Now, there's a grant given by the Gates Foundation for the Novavax to COVID-19 vaccine under the category of HIV pneumonia, and it was published on the GatesFoundation.org website in July of 2020. Now, if that's not enough reason for you to stay away from it, there's this report out from the Yale Medicine team, and you know, these are supposedly respected organizations. I don't know how respected they are anymore, but it states that the mRNA vaccines, that's Pfizer and Moderna, instruct the body's cells to continuously create spike proteins. Now, these spike proteins, they're like wrecking balls, and that's not my words. That's from the quote. But the other vaccines, and they listed Novavax, Johnson & Johnson, and AstraZeneca, are non-mRNA carriers for spike proteins. And it goes on to say that the Novavax injects the spike protein itself, and the Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca instruct the cells to make the spike proteins. And you can get all this over at yalemedicine.org/news/COVID-19-vaccine-comparison. And if you didn't catch that, just email me at kdbeer1961@gmail.com, and I'll get it out to you. And I also started a proton mail link after Bill Sweet over at Oculum Labs talked about the throttling that's going on with a lot of these emails now, too. Now, Novavax, and I'm quoting out of that, it contains the spike proteins of the coronavirus itself, but formulated as a nanoparticle. There's that nanoparticle again, Alex. And I do believe that's how they're doing it. And I do believe they aerosol spray this. There's technology out there we've covered earlier in earlier shows. And I think that they've done it over specific events. And I think they also do it targeting certain communities. Now, they went on to say, J&J, how it works. This is a carrier vaccine, which uses a different approach than the mRNA vaccines to instruct human cells to make the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein. And then it says this about AstraZeneca. Similar to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, this is a carrier vaccine. Scientists engineer a harmless adenovirus as a shell to carry the genetic code on the spike protein to the cells. Once the code is inside the cells produce a spike protein. Now, these claims by big pharma folks and the lying media and the government are that these vaccines are harmless with very few, if any, rare side effects. And as for deaths, right now I think the VAERS database has, what, 2,000, 3,000 deaths? And they stopped some of the earlier vaccine programs for the swine flu after 50. What's going on here, folks? Now, the reason I'm talking about this Yale site is because it's the enemy itself describing how the enemy itself is going to use the vaccines to deliver spike proteins. Now, this is just more of their lesser magic, folks. You know, that full disclosure and consent. So they tell the masses, they tell the sheeple, they tell the useless eaters who they hold an extreme contempt for what they're going to do before they do it, and then they get their consent to do it. Now, the only problem is that they haven't realized yet that people are waking up to the fact that HIV also contains spike proteins. In fact, the old HIV virus and this new coronavirus have so many things in common. In fact, did you know that the COVID-19 spike protein pathogen has four HIV inserts? And this was proven in a paper back in January 2020 that we talked about here on SDG, instructing the host cells to create more spike proteins, which in turn causes the immune deficiencies to pile up faster and faster and faster, worse than the old HIV/AIDS. This thing is AIDS on steroids. It's vaccine-acquired immune deficiency. We've talked about that. So there's a paper out there on that too. And there's these nine Indian scientists that talked about this. If you want a link to that paper, email me and I'll get it out to you, okay? Folks, this is man-made, not naturally occurring. These inserts into this COVID-19 virus were put there by the laboratory and done serendipitously to create a convergence of sorts of a couple different elements necessary to create this high gain of function pathogen. Folks, this isn't coincidence. In fact, just last week, talk about coincidences, that the mainstream media is starting to talk about the natural occurrence of this hidden enemy, you know, the China virus, that maybe it did come from the wet market. You know, this virus came out of the wet market. Isn't it strange? You know, this happened right after the Scarf Ladies book came out. Remember her? Burke up there in all those pressers with Fauci and Trump and his team that put knives in his back. And then there was Redfield, the head of the CDC. Do you remember what he said? I had another clip after he resigned where he basically said science will get it all out. But let's just play this clip where he told the Senate that he prefers the face mask over the vaccine, and then he even got more bold after his resignation.
I'm not going to comment directly about the president, but I am going to comment as the CDC director that these face masks are the most important, powerful public health tool we have. And I will continue to appeal for all Americans, all individuals in our country, to embrace these face coverings. I've said it, if we did it for 6, 8, 10, 12 weeks, we'd bring this pandemic under control. These actually, we have clear scientific evidence, they work, and they are our best defense. I might even go so far as to say that this face mask is more guaranteed to protect me against COVID than when I take a COVID vaccine, because the immunogenicity may be 70%. And if I don't get an immune response, the vaccine is not going to protect me. This face mask will. So I do want to keep asking the American public to take the responsibility, particularly the 18 to 25-year-olds, where we're seeing the outbreak in America continue to go like this, because we haven't got the acceptance, the personal responsibility that we need for all Americans to embrace this face mask.
So there's Redfield, head of the CDC, basically starting to back out of the whole vaccine narrative, but he's still in the establishment, so he said, wear your slave mask, you know, put your face diaper on. And I think he even changed his tune on that after he left the public sector. Now, how long ago did we play that? A year ago, year and a half ago? Folks, listeners to SDG get the info weeks, if not months or even years ahead of most. In fact, I suspect that at least a few of the well-known alt-media personalities have listened to SDG. And the reason I say that is I'll say something very specific on here, or I'll craft my words a certain way, and then wouldn't you know, a week or 2 weeks after I said that, here on SDG, I hear it on one of their podcasts. I hear it on one of their interviews. I read it in one of their blogs. Now, let's be honest, folks. We all kind of influence one another. I read all their information. I look at good comments, and I kind of gather the cream everywhere. But to be honest with you, I churn my own butter. This is a work a labor of love here, folks, and I put this together to try to wake you up. That's what it's all about, okay? Now, the Merriam-Webster Dictionary has a definition for spike protein, and within that definition, you can read this passage. Using a powerful imaging technique, researchers from the National Institutes of Health, Weill Cornell Medical University, and Yale University School of Medicine observed the motions of key proteins on the surface of HIV called spike proteins. This was a contribution by Emily Mullen. So would anyone really want these man-made HIV spike proteins in their system through a COVID-19 virus like Novavax or AstraZeneca or Pfizer? Would you really, folks? Now, folks, I've noticed that with this steady wave of SAD, sudden adult death syndrome, we could start an entire segment of nothing more than all the deaths in the past week. We call it the SAD report, but I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to continue to share with you when I hear it. Now, J.D. Rucker reported this week that three doctors die within 4 days shortly after the hospital begins injecting staff with their fourth COVID shot. Three young and otherwise healthy doctors died last week, all working for the same hospital system up in Canada, all having within the last 72 hours received their fourth COVID shot. Then someone in the hospital started blowing the whistle, and these three doctors all came from the Mississauga hospital system in Ontario, Canada. And the fourth was from a nearby North York General Hospital. And their names are Dr. Jakub Sawicki, Dr. Stephen McKenzie, Dr. Lauren Siegel, and Dr. Paul Hanneman. Now, I've seen their photos. They're all healthy young people, probably in their late 20s to early 40s. And now there's a fifth. Just days after this report came out, a 27-year-old triathlete doctor, at 27 years old, that means that person could maybe still be in their residency. She dies 4 days after while swimming, 4 days after getting the death jab. She's the fifth GTA doctor now to die within 2 weeks. This is insane. Her name was Dr. Candace Naiman, and she was the fifth in the Greater Toronto Area to die in July after receiving the fourth jab. Now, neither Rucker nor Steve Kirsch have been able to independently confirm this story, but a Reddit member did. So this is just happening more and more and more. Now, how many more coincidences will we need before we, the people, stand up and demand that these death jabs be stopped? Sadly, folks, it's all being swept under the rug by the hospital, the mainstream media, the government, ignored by the corporate media and denounced by Big Pharma as simply conspiracy theory. But the mountains of evidence continue to add up. And I'm telling you, folks, the true conspiracy is the lies being put forth by the establishment concerning these COVID jabs and the truth to get out. We, the people, need to stay the course, folks, and keep pressing forward with the truth in this info war. We truly do. Now, the truth is that it was never about a vaccine to keep you, quote unquote, safe from the China virus. It's always been about something much darker and more sinister. It's about bioengineering your genome, folks. And in the common vernacular, it's known as biohacking. And we've played that in the past. And right now, I'd like to play this five-minute clip. This is Jane Calvert speaking on behalf of the World Economic Forum, and she's talking about engineering biology and engineering society. Just have a listen.
So I'm a social scientist and I work in a field called science and technology studies, where we examine the interconnections between social and technical developments. And I'm going to start my presentation with a duck and a bridge, and I'll hope to show you what these have to say about my topic of engineering biology and society. So I'll start off with the duck, and this is the digesting duck from 1739, and it was an attempt to apply the engineering ideals of the time onto a biological system. And I think we're seeing the same thing happening in synthetic biology, where we see engineering ideas being applied onto biology. And I'll give you a couple of examples of this. My first is from the field of mechanical engineering, and it's this idea of a chassis. And in synthetic biology, the word chassis is used to mean the biological context into which parts can be put. In other words, it's another name for the cell. So a question that interests me is, what happens when we start calling a cell a chassis? What does that enable and what does that suppress? Does it encourage us to ignore the unique features of a living thing, or does it facilitate our understanding of what it means to engineer with biology? My second example comes from computer engineering, and it's an idea called refactoring, and it means rationalizing and cleaning up computer code. And synthetic biologists do something very similar. They attempt to rationalize and clean up genetic code. So these are two examples of where ideas from engineering have become imposed onto biology. Now, obviously, synthetic biologists realize that biology is very different from the things that we normally engineer. But I do think that the engineering aspirations of synthetic biology could perhaps have profound implications on the types of things that are brought into the world in the future, as this speculative artwork suggests. So that's my kind of idea of engineering biology, and now I'm going to turn to engineering society and to my bridge. And the specific bridges I want to talk about are those that lead over the roads that go from New York through Long Island to the beaches and parks beyond. And as you can see about this bridge, it's actually very low, which means that buses can't pass underneath it. And the story goes that Robert Moses, who actually designed these bridges, purposely designed them so that poor people who didn't own cars couldn't get to the beaches beyond. So here we see how something as simple as a bridge actually has social values built into it. And there are many other examples of this. Perhaps a more positive example is that we've routinely come to expect that our public transport systems should have disabled access built into them. But this only came about after decades of pressure from disabled rights activists. So technologies enable things and they prevent things and they embody what we value as a society. And I think the same thing applies in synthetic biology, because synthetic biological designs have values built into them. And just to give you an example, there's a strong movement towards developing biological parts that can easily be shared. And these types of decisions about intellectual property will have important implications on the future of synthetic biology and on who can be part of this future. So in engineering biology, synthetic biologists are simultaneously engineering society. So I think it's really important to think about what type of future we want synthetic biology to bring into the world. And just to give you an example of this, there's lots of talk of synthetic biology being the next industrial revolution. But I don't think we should forget that the last industrial revolution resulted in tremendous inequalities and environmental destruction. So perhaps synthetic biology should try and build a different future, one that is more sustainable. And one of the ways I think we should do this is by having interdisciplinary conversations, which will necessarily include dissenting voices. And this is because there are many different ways of imagining how we should best make use of our powers to manipulate the biological world. And there are many different paths that we can take. And one of the reasons I'm so keen on interdisciplinary collaborations is because I had a project bringing together synthetic biologists, social scientists, and artists and designers called Synthetic Aesthetics. And many things arose out of this project, including disposable packaging that builds its own contents, and cheeses made from the bacteria that grow on human skin. One of the kind of objectives of this project was to challenge synthetic biology and to stop it going down narrow and unimaginative paths. And this brings me back to my main point, that in engineering biology, we also engineer society. And if we want to build a better technology in a better society, we have to acknowledge that the two cannot be separated.
Wow. Did you hear all that, folks? So why this interest by the World Economic Forum in hacking biology? Now, those aren't my words. Those are the words of the Moderna boss, who said that mRNA technology, these jabs, write genetic code. They rewrite genetic code. We're hacking the human genome. Now, we've played this one several times. I'd like to just remind you of what this Moderna boss admitted in a TED Talk back in 2017.
So I started my professional life about 30 years ago as a nurse in the pediatric intensive care unit. And I remember this one infant, let's call him Jonathan, who came in really, really ill. Seemed to have a rare genetic defect, but in those days, gene diagnosis was still in its infancy, so we couldn't really figure out what's wrong with him. And in the years since, as I've trained as a physician scientist, we've been living this phenomenal digital and scientific revolution. And I'm here today to tell you that we're actually hacking the software of life and that it's changing the way we think about prevention and treatment of disease. So here's all the biology you need to know in 30 seconds. Our body is made out of organs. Our organs are made out of cells. And in every cell, there's this thing called messenger RNA, or mRNA for short, that transmits the critical information from the DNA, our genes, to the protein, which is really the stuff we're all made out of. This is the critical information that determines what a cell will actually do. And so we think of it like an operating system. And it's not just in every cell of our body, it's actually in every cell of every organism alive. It's the same thing. And so if you could actually change that, which we call the software of life, if you could introduce a line of code or change a line of code, it turns out that has profound implications for everything from the flu to cancer. And I'm going to demonstrate that with three short examples.
So you heard it right out of his mouth, folks. To hack the human genome. Now, this didn't start in 2017. This didn't start in 2010. This stinking thinking goes back decades. In fact, it goes all the way back to the 1980s, and we're going to cover that in great detail in the Back to the Future episode. But this stinking thinking was revealed in an interview by Michael Solomon with Jacques Attali. He was the advisor to the French prime minister back in the 80s. He was a brilliant man. Some people have called him a genius. I believe he's still alive. But like I said, more on that later in Back to the Future. Now, here's why they're doing it, folks. You know, we've covered Noah Yuval Harari ad nauseum on here. He's the WEF's top advisor to Klaus Schwab. He's the atheistic, God-hating humanist who shakes his fist. His angry fist is just shaking all the time at God, okay? And he and his technocratic, globalistic buddies, they're going to be the next gods of this world. Have a listen to this 31-second clip of Yuval Noah Harari basically saying that, well, God only made organic things. We're making inorganic things. Take a listen.
The only thing God managed to create are organic beings. All these trees and giraffes and humans, they're just organic. But we are now trying to create inorganic entities, inorganic life forms, cyborgs, artificial intelligence, and so forth. If we succeed, and there is a very good chance we will, then very soon we will be beyond the God of the Bible.
Makes me laugh, folks. Probably 20 years ago, well, I'll give it 18, Terry and I were very active in the art scene here in Western Pennsylvania. In fact, I became the president of the largest arts organization in Pittsburgh, the Associated Artists of Pittsburgh. And we had our eyes open to the vitriol in the liberals' minds. In fact, since my wife Terry is an artist, everybody thinks she's a liberal, but she really isn't. She's very conservative in her thinking, very freedom-minded. And when they found out that about Terry, they just turned on her like wolves, ready to rip her apart. But back when I was in that, I was doing some art as what they call an outsider, because I'm not formally trained. And there's a lot of politics there, and I don't want to get into all that. But I took a photograph. We were collecting some barn rocks to do a retaining wall at my neighbor's farm up the road. They have a sheep farm. And he let me go into one of his fields where there was an old barn. And I saw this pickup truck, an old Ford from the 40s, sitting under an oak tree. Now, it was stripped down. The doors were missing. It was all rusty. It was, you know, one of those old Ford pickup trucks, an F-100, I believe it was, or Ford made back then. And the engine had been removed and the hood was off. And that giant oak tree probably dropped thousands of acorns over the years. And one of them took root and germinated, or germinated and took root inside the engine compartment of the truck. And outside of the engine compartment was growing another oak tree. And I took a photograph of it. And I just typed man versus nature. And my point is that the beauty of God's creation in the organic realm is that his system is self-sustaining. And man can try to destroy it. Man can try to mar it and scar it. But nature just keeps marching on year after year after year. And what did I see there? I saw nature literally consuming the inorganic creation of man. So Noah, if you think your inorganic garbage is any better than what God's created, you're a fool. You know, this psychopath reminds me of the character Mr. Sensible. I talked about him last week from C.S. Lewis's Pilgrim's Regress. And the entire cabal from the World Economic Forum reminds me of the center in that book called, actually in another book, in the third, the Space Trilogy. You know, reminds me of the group NICE, the National Institute on something, something. C.S. Lewis understood this whole technocracy. C.S. Lewis understood this godless mindset of the secular humanists. And I can do a whole show on that, folks, but we have to keep moving. And right now, it's time for our Kabuki Theater Update.
COVID-19, George Floyd, Rice, BLM, police reform, the 2020 elections. All merely coincidence? I hardly think so. Folks, it's called Kabuki Theater in Japanese. Ka means salt. Boo means dance. Ki means skill from the verb. Kabu means to slant or to sway. Folks, it's all a lie. It's the flatten the curve. The curve of the economy, stupid. Must slow down the velocity of money. Portal hyperinflate before we're done. Stealing it all. Trump, bad. Must go. Good is bad. Bad is good. Up is down. Light is dark. It's all Kabuki Theater, folks. Prepping the masses for Agenda 2030 and the new world order. Just say no to it all and wake up before it's too late.
Now, I've been talking about Bill Sweet and Oculum Labs and Gideon the hacker, whistleblower, and his team who's starting to reveal what's going to be coming out with the Great Reset and the classification of the masses as commoners, and then the throttling of people like me into the quarantined and restricted groups, and then, of course, the gatekeepers in the sovereign class. Well, this is even starting to leak out into the more, I don't want to call the mainstream, but into the larger or broader alt media financial folks. Now, there's this guy, we know him as the rich dad, poor dad guy, Robert Kiyosaki, and that book is very good. And I got on to Robert back during the last economic crisis at the end of the Bush administration into the beginning of the Obama regime. And Kiyosaki's now warning about Executive Order 14067, which is the foundation upon which this new social credit score digital reserve system is going to be executed. And he calls CBDC, central bank digital currency, communism in its purest form. So he's right on with what he advised with regard to the 2007-2008 financial crisis. And so he's had some very choice words concerning the central bank digital currency. Oh, and by the way, folks, this central bank digital currency literally is what Bill Sweet and his team with Gideon are talking about. It is the CSRQ-SM, social management. It's a software package that we've been talking about now. You know, Bill Sweet and the whistleblower Gideon and Oculum Labs, they're revealing all this. And I talked about it last week, and the podcast was attacked with some throttling. I've been watching this very closely, and right now everything seems to be good, and I find that very strange. But I'm going to keep going. I keep my eyes up on the board, and I look at my internet speeds, and I'm watching everything, praying that the thing continues to function. But anyways, folks, this is all Luciferian. It's a Luciferian program. It's going to be used worldwide by select governmental and banking institutions when this financial reset occurs, and it's all about control. Now, in a tweet last Monday, Kiyosaki called President Joe Biden's signed executive order the most treasonous act in U.S. history. And the creation of the CBDC is communism in its purest form. His words, not mine. And he's encouraging Americans to stay awake. Now, the tweet read that Jim Rickards made his most important announcement today. It's about the most treasonous act in the U.S. history, Biden's executive order 14067. It's communism in its purest form, the creation of CBDC, central bank digital currency. Stay awake, tune into Rickards, tune out Biden, take care. So now, according to Kiyosaki, Rickards has the most important announcement about this, and I believe Rickards is also on it. Now, Rickards criticized CBDC and labeled it as Bitcoin's evil cousin, and he's exposing it, and he's going to call it C-Day when it actually hits. And he believes it's going to take place in December of this year. He actually set a date. He said December 13th. Now, he has a computer, and he's been doing this for years, and he runs these algorithms, and he thinks he has it all pinned. Now, a little bit on Rickards. I wonder if he's sovereign. He's an ex-CIA insider, okay? And he's been out there advising financially for years. And I've got a lot more detail here about Rickards, and he's actually put an infomercial out. The first 10 minutes are worth listening to. The next 30, or he's just selling you his newsletter. But I would encourage you to check out Rickards' latest. Listen to the first 10 minutes of the infomercial, and you'll get everything you need. From the scamming, the stolen 2020 elections, to the scapegoating of Russia, to the fuel prices, telling us that we're witnessing the greatest transition in energy that this country has ever seen. Now, remember, we're going to talk about this futurist named Adderley in the Back to the Future segment, and he said in the interview that energy to information.
Right now, we are witnessing the beginning of one of the most significant events in human history, the clean energy transition. It is long overdue, and it can't progress fast enough.
Grown out, they become very aggressive. They're dangerous. So the way farmers catch them is they place a bag of feed corn in their location, and they do that for a while, and these feral pigs will come and eat on it. Then they start to place fence posts in four corners, and the pigs come. Then they start to put boards between the posts, and the pigs come. And then ultimately, while these wild boars are eating at the stall, so to speak, the farmer comes over and closes the gate, and he's caught the wild pigs. That's what the establishment's doing with the common people right now, the normies, and we the people have to wake up. But I have to keep moving, folks. It's time for our newest segment, Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow, 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 follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick, follow the Yellow Brick, follow the Yellow Brick Road. You're off to see the river, the wonderful river above. You'll find the end of the river, the river, if ever a river runs. If ever a river, a river was, the river of Oz is one because of the wonderful things he does. You're off to see the river, the wonderful river of Oz.
You know, folks, for the love of money is the root of all evil. Not some evil, all evil, folks. And what we need to do is understand this and resist. So this week, serial liar Al Gore himself says that climate deniers are like the Uvalde police who sat back and didn't rescue the children.
Really?
That's right, Alvin. This globalist fraud, Al Gore, actually had the nerve to say climate deniers are really, in some ways, very similar to all those almost 400 law enforcement officers waiting outside an unlocked door while the children were being massacred. Can you believe the hubris of this man, the insensitivity of this liar? Al Gore himself, folks, is basically a grifter. And he compares these climate deniers to Uvalde. Just have a listen here on this clip.
You know, the climate deniers are really in some ways similar to all of those almost 400 law enforcement officers in Uvalde, Texas, who were waiting outside an unlocked door while the children were being massacred. They heard the screams, they heard the gunshots, and nobody stepped forward. And God bless those families who suffered so much. And law enforcement officials tell us that's not typical of what law enforcement usually does. And confronted with this global emergency, what we're doing with our inaction and failing to walk through the door and stop the killing is not typical of what we are capable of as human beings. We do have the solutions, and I think these extreme events that are getting steadily worse and more severe are really beginning to change minds. We have to have unity as a nation to come together and stop making this a political football. It shouldn't be a partisan issue.
Now, this type of inflammatory rhetoric, this lying, isn't new for this grifter, Al Gore. Al Gore's previously compared global warming to the 9/11 attacks. And in 2008, Al Gore warned that the polar ice cap would be completely melted by 2013. Didn't happen, folks. He's a grifter. The fact is that global temperatures were lower this last decade than when Al Gore first started spouting his junk science. And that's what it is, folks. These issues aren't about global control. I'm looking outside right now, and it's literally beautiful. There's no chemtrails. The sun's beautiful, and this is God's good creation. I'm looking out into a pine forest, and it's absolutely beautiful. I'm telling you, Gore's climate claim is false. In his 2006 Inconvenient Truth, he claimed falsely that rising atmospheric carbon creates highest planetary temperatures. And the opposite is literally true. Higher temps increase carbon. The Great Global Warming Swindle is a documentary that I recommend you watch. In fact, I might get into that. Let me write a note there. I'm going to write a note. The Great Global Warming Swindle. I had that in my notes. Maybe we can get into that next week. But anyways, folks, Gore takes science and literally reverses it to suit his needs. There's this July 2019 Finnish study from Turku University in Finland that found no evidence for any significant anthropogenic, and that's man-made, climate change. Remember what I told you that they did in the Rio summit back in, what was it, 1988? They said that as we monitor global warming, we eliminate all natural causes like sunspot activity, sun cycles, volcanism, massive forest fires. You have to eliminate all that. And just look at man-made. Man-made is like 3-4 orders of magnitude lower. Folks, I'm telling you, this fat cat Gore, he's seriously bluffing. We could do an entire expose on Gore himself. You know, we talked about his carbon credit company over in England called Gore and Blood. But let's keep moving, folks. Right now, I'd like to focus a little bit on the work that Bill Sweet's doing over at Oculum Labs with whistleblower Gideon and his team. Some really good stuff, folks. And what I'd like to do is just talk a little bit about his latest post, A Little Complete Sovereign Gatekeepers. Now, Gideon said, my guys didn't want to keep looking because every person we found was sovereign. So here's a list, politicians. Trump's on it, folks. So is Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, Ron DeSantis, Gavin Newsom, Pritzker, Greg Abbott, Nikki Haley, Senator Ted Cruz. Good old Ted Cruz is on it. There's foreign leaders like Poilievre, Merkel, Boris Johnson, Macron. Oh, Ardern from down in, wasn't she from New Zealand? We've played her clips before. Anthony Albanese, Jeremy Corbyn. Some of those were in the clip. Those are some of the people that got COVID again, you know, from their the clips we played. And then there's liberal influencers like Setter and Uyghur and Piker and Pacman. And the conservative influencers, here's the ones that have been confirmed to be sovereigns. Ben Shapiro, Dennis Prager, Glenn Beck, Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, Eva Loudenbrook, I don't know her, Jordan Peterson, Paul Joseph Watson, Candace Owens, good old Candace, Steve Bannon, we're going to be playing one of his clips here, Matt Walsh, Ezra Levant, Gavin McGinnis, Stephen Crowder, Charlie Kirk, Lindell is on the list, folks. And then in alternative media, we have Russell Brand, David Wilcock, the pedophile, Phil Godlewski, Alex Jones, Joe Rogan, Benjamin Fulford. Now, religious leaders, folks, and we're going to cover some more on why it's really important to have good pastor teachers in the wrap-up of this show. We've got Dana Coverstone, Paula White, Larry Hutch, Dr. Mike Evans, Franklin Graham, Pope Francis, all sovereigns. Some of the celebrities, Tom Hanks, Nicole Kidman, Dwayne Johnson, Stephen Colbert. Remember I mentioned Stephen Colbert? He has the most vitriol towards the awakened. He has the most vitriol towards the people that are independent thinkers like you and me and refuse the death jab. Leonardo DiCaprio, Katy Perry. So some of the business insiders and leaders, Elon Musk, Tim Cook, Frank Lowy, Sundar Pichai. I don't know some of these people. Sheryl Sandberg and Mark Benioff, all sovereigns. Now, some of the non-sovereigns that they found were Robert F. Kennedy Jr., you know, with his anti-vax agenda. Jair Bolsonaro, David Knight, James O'Keefe, Maxine Brainer, Steve Quell, Jeff Rentz, Brendan O'Connell, Bob Lazar, all commoners. Oh, by the way, Brendan O'Connell is quarantined. Oh, I'm sorry. Some of these are restricted. So they're either restricted, common, or quarantined. Now, he also put together a list of suspected sovereigns, and I want to read this for you, folks. He said, the following list has not been viewed in any software, partly due to the difficulty in determining the real legal names of these individuals. This list is based on other outside metrics. We can reasonably rate the likelihood of these individuals being sovereigns based on their public gatekeeping activities. And I'm going to comment on that a little bit more later in the show. So Dave from the X20 report has a likelihood of 99%. Mel Kwano Savin, 95. Simon Parks, 95. Charlie Ward, 95. The SGD report creator, 85. Michael Jaco, 80. Mike Adams, good old Mike, 70%. And Stu Peters, yes, Stu Peters is even on here at 70% likely sovereign. Now, they go on to say that this above list isn't complete, and more details are going to be added, including information on when certain people became sovereign, and more will be added in the suspected sovereign section as they get it. It's going to be updated weekly, in fact, at times even daily. So I encourage you to get out there to oculumlabs.com and read their latest update called The Complete List of Sovereign Gatekeepers. Folks, there's a lot of information there, but I have to keep moving right now. And right now, it's time for Prep Talk with Henrietta. Where are you, Henrietta? I don't see you. There you are. Oh, by the way, folks, if you didn't know this, free-ranging poultry, chickens, but important, Cornish game hens. I just forgot the name. of the hen. It's got a very small head and a very big fat body. Oh, I just forgot the name, not quail. Anyways, poultry free-ranging are very good insect scavengers, particularly if you have a tick infestation. You know, they're using that as the infection vector for Lyme disease, which again is another lab-engineered bioweapon against we the people. It just didn't have a fast-acting effect. It was actually designed for battlefield use, but they found that the incubation time was too long. But now it's out, and it is a legitimate problem. But today what I want to talk about isn't chickens and eating bugs and ticks. What I want to talk about is low-tech security. You know, as we move further and further into this great reset, we're going to have to secure our properties and our homesteads, and there's some very low-tech ways to do that. We were having a pest problem in the garden, and I just picked up a very good game camera, $2, folks. This records audio, video, and still photos, JPEGs, high resolution, 1080, and it has the ability to take up to a 32 megabit chip. Is that what you call it? You know, those little SD cards. And you know, literally for a couple $100 on it, it runs on eight AA batteries. If you want this specific model, I'm not plugging it, but I'm very happy with it. And it has a little 2-inch LED screen on it. So you can put these around your property. And they're camo. They're easy to hide. And you can check them routinely. And if you want to spend a few more bucks, you can actually get Wi-Fi or Bluetooth enabled. So you can literally walk up with your phone and just check each. And then you just do your battery maintenance. And you have 24-hour surveillance, infrared and full color, high definition, and you can see if we're surveilling your property or actually trying to penetrate your lines of defense. Now, what are some other lines of defense? Well, you could have store-like. You could pick those up at the store. Even the dollar stores have them now. Now, what I like about those is if the power goes out, you still have light that's motion activated, plus the good old watchdog. I'm not talking about a guard dog. I'm just talking about a dog that barks. And when that dog barks, it wakes you up. So there are some low-tech solutions. That's my point here, folks. And what I encourage you to do is to research this and just start to think about ways that you can secure your property, because it's very important that we are protecting our assets and our supplies and our loved ones during these crazy times that are about to unfold. Now, we have to keep moving, and right now, it's time for our Hopium Report.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hopium Report, where dreamers of all sorts come for their faith snort. Prepare to get high on Hopium.
Now, in this next clip, Steve Bannon was on Sebastian Gorka's show, and he's talking about Biden is going to be impeached, and the 2020 election results in Wisconsin and Arizona will be decertified. Now, this was a 45-minute interview. And remember, Steve Bannon's on the sovereign list, folks, along with Trump. So they are, quote-unquote, gatekeepers spewing out the hope. You know, there's a lot of truth in what they're saying, but they're not telling you how to become empowered. They're basically saying, hey, pop up a bowl of popcorn, sit back and enjoy the show. So Steve Bannon was on Gorka's show, and I just took about 5 minutes out of the middle of this clip, and I just want to have you listen to the hopium that's being spewed. Actually, it's 6 minutes. So let's just have a listen. Oh, and by the way, Gorka was also on Trump's staff. You know, Peter Navarro, Gorka, Steve Bannon, they were some of the true, if you want to call them that, patriots, the true freedom-loving, America-first-type MAGA advisors to President Trump. And then there were a lot of swamp people, rhinos, you know, Republicans in name only that were actually put on Trump's team. And I do believe that the entire Trump phenomena, the MAGA movement, is just nothing more than controlled opposition. What, back in 2016, we did an interview Sister Kathy and I did a segment with Garcia, Zen Garcia, on his show. And I said that, you know, we're just going to allow time to tell, but I think it's fairly clear right now that the masks are off and true colors are coming out, and this was controlled opposition. But anyways, this populist movement sweeping across, and there's a lot of hope in it. So let's just listen to Steve Bannon, Sebastian Gorka spew about 6 minutes of hopium. Now, the reason I'm doing this is you need to start to listen critically and understand so that you can discern as we mature emotionally and spiritually, and I'm going to add intellectually.
Adjudicate the November election in 2020. And look at all that, or look at all the different states, particularly the battleground states, and look exactly what happened. In addition, look at all the intelligence reporting running up to January 6th. It'll get into the what the FBI knew, what FBI assets out there. Obviously, Ashley Babbitt, all the carnage that was there, who was involved in it, the 14,000 hours. There'll be a real investigation. It'll take many months, and I think it will shock the American people. And this show trial will just kind of, it's very ephemeral. And it'll just blow, you know, like dust in the wind. It'll be irrelevant and forgotten, and people will focus on the real investigation. But there's a real investigation ahead of us.
I had Matt Gaetz on the show recently with MTG, Steve, and he painted this lovely picture of, yes, we win the midterms, and then he said, every committee of Congress will be turned into an investigatory committee, and we will have oversight and subpoenas. And I thought about it for a second, Steve, and I thought, yeah, exciting, I like that. And then I realized, I don't give a damn. I couldn't care less. I'm not interested in congressional subpoenas or contempt of Congress. I want people charged for crimes. If you look at the border, if you look at Mayorkas, if you look at fentanyl, I want people charged for complicity in aiding and abetting the cartels. I want people in the brig. As a former officer of the U.S. Navy, the fact that nobody has been fired, let alone resigned or put in the brig for Afghanistan, is it enough to say, oh, let Congress do its work because, oh, we'll have another IG report? Aren't we beyond congressional subpoenas and IG reports, Steve?
We are 100%, but I think you got to look at the process. I mean, if we took over the executive branch immediately, those things will come. That's in 2024. I think we have to look at, the way I look at it is that after we win these sweeping victories, Seb, the next 2 years, 23 and 24, are like a preamble to a presidency, a preamble to a restoration. That will be intense investigations and sending over criminal referrals to the Justice Department, many of which they're not going to execute on. We know that, but that's where we put more pressure on. But then when we take over in 2024, this is one of the whole issues you see on Axios, where we're talking about the deconstruction of the administrative state. From that opening segment of yours, remember, I was there to talk about the three things: national security, economic nationalism, deconstruction of the administrative state, the three lines of work of the Trump administration. And that's what you're going to see in the next, in the second term, his third victory, but the second term. But we need a preamble to that. And I think what we need to do is congressional, not just oversight, but real investigations. Also, Seb, we got to lay the predicate for the impeachment of Biden. Biden's going to be impeached. Two things are going to happen. Number one, we are going to decertify those electors in Wisconsin and Arizona. We're going to do that in a formal legal process. That will also start, or we'll get it, we'll exacerbate that in starting in January. But then the impeachment will start after we've done the investigations of Fauci, after you've done the investigations of the laptop from hell, after you've done the investigations of the invasion on the southern border, and also January 6th. So all that's to come, but that work, we can't just forego it for the simple reason we can't charge, do real criminal charges out of the Justice Department. That day's coming, but
right,
we got to work.
But here's my question to you, and I ask this of every MAGA politician who comes on my show, guys and gals who come on your show. I use that old Cold War phrase you're very familiar with, the correlation of forces. What is the balance of fat power? What is the correlation of forces between the MAGA America First political class and the Rhino GOP swamp? None of what you have described happens if the old school controls the levers of power. Matt Gaetz, everybody else, MTG, they're junior congressmen. Will we see a GOP with testicular fortitude after November?
This is going to depend. By the way, these primaries next Tuesday are going to give us a good indication of that. This is basically where Donald Trump's going to have to put his shoulder to the wheel. I happen to believe he's going to announce relatively shortly.
Yes.
But he's the one that's driving the driving energy of this. He's the one that's delivering the votes. And I will tell you, and I'm very blunt to the people around him, people are fed up. They want to see action, action, action. We don't have the ability now to put in a bunch of establishment uniparty Republicans and just play the game like it's always been played. There has to be a different philosophy. That's why I think the Axios stories over the last week, this two-part series by Jonathan Swan, talks about the deconstruction of the administrative state, the 4,000 political appointees, they'll be the shock troops. As you know, you remember, Seb, because you worked on and oversaw some of the beachhead teams, some of the landing teams to get into the departments. We have to do that immediately. And so, no, this is going to require action, and a lot of that's going to come. President Trump has got to be very focused on this. I will tell you, over the last couple of days at the America First Policy Institute, I was not heartened by some of the policies I saw being put forward. I think this needs to be a real tight, highly focused, and shoulder to the wheel. And it's got to come with action. And that's going to depend on who President Trump supports to be Speaker of the House. It's going to depend about who wins these Senate primaries over the next couple of weeks, because Mitch McConnell could have six or seven senators, and they're young senators, who don't support him as leader.
Yeah.
So this
yeah.
is all going to come down, and I agree with you 1,000%.
He is the former chief strategist to President Trump. I worked for him as strategist to the president. You know him from War Room, from Breitbart. He's Steve Bannon. Listen to them every day. I'm Sebastian Gorka. If you enjoy America First, make sure you are subscribed to this show. Go to Spotify, plug in my name, Sebastian Gorka, America First. It's absolutely free. Write a five-star review. It helps with those dastardly algorithms. Share the links and guarantee that you never, ever miss an episode.
Well, folks, it happened. My call was dropped. I wondered how long it was going to take, but it happened during that clip. So I'm off the air, and I'm on backup right now. This is like clockwork. Let's see right now if we can recover it. I don't know if I'm going to be able to, but I certainly would like to. I'm telling you, folks, this happens every single time I cover controversial information. Now, I've been doing speed checks through this entire process, and I thought for certain that I found the problem, and that wasn't the case. So let's see if we can reestablish connection here. And like I said, it's always very frustrating. So it looks like it's coming back on. Let's see. Okay, so I've reestablished. And let's see if I can call myself back up. I'm going to mute the backup. Okay, I think I'm back on the air. Praise the Lord. So, folks, you heard about 6 minutes of hopium from Steve Bannon with Sebastian Gorka. And I don't see their position the same way, quite honestly. I don't. Here's what I see. I see this regime a couple steps away from literally being able, since they really want to do it anyways, to say, yeah, we did it. What are you going to do about it? I'm referring to anything they do that's unconstitutional, illegal, unlawful, from stealing the 2020 election to poisoning billions of people with this mRNA jab to persecuting Alex Jones in this court. Now, that could all be a show trial, too. You know, Alex is on the list as a sovereign, and apparently funds have just been moved into his account. So they're going to play this game, and they're going to get to the point where they say, we have the nukes and you don't. And I believe they fully intend to never lose another election, ever. And that's my position, folks. Oh, and sure, they smile, and they're dressed up nice, and they make assurances. I'm talking about the people in the MAGA movement, too, some of these people that are on the sovereign list. I'm telling you, the whole time their totalitarian boot heel is just being driven into your chin as your face is laying in the dust, just like from Jack London's Iron Heel novel, revealing all of these methodologies, what, a century ago? You know, half of the people out there are afraid to look and admit this, and the other half wouldn't recognize it if they saw it. But right now, folks, we have to keep moving. It's time for our Absurdian Report.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the world of the absurd. This is the Absurdium Report.
Life mimics theater, but fiction is safer. The curtain rises. The show begins.
Okay, I don't know if you heard this, but the Biden economic advisor, Brian Deese, was out there this week on, I believe it was CNN, basically downplaying recession fears and in an Orwellian word speak, redefining what recession means. So, you know, the economy is in its second successive quarter of downturn, which is the classic definition of a recession. And then the Atlanta Fed announces the Atlanta Fed's the one that announced the 2.1% decrease in GDP. And then remember, it shrunk by 1.6% in the first quarter. So the downturn is actually accelerating, and that defines a recession. But folks, I think this is on the level of depression. And this is what Deese had to say concerning this R word this week on CNN. Listen to this absurd.
Here anticipating what will be comments from some saying two quarters of negative growth in a row, that's a recession.
Right, and certainly in terms of the technical definition, it's not a recession. The technical definition considers a much broader spectrum of data points. But in practical terms, what matters to the American people is whether they have a little economic breathing room, they have more job opportunities, their wages are going up. That has been Joe Biden's focus since coming into office. He has had a view of the economy that we need to look to build from the bottom up and middle out. And what that means is that typical working class people in this country have had trouble affording things for years. He is focused on building a strong, durable economic recovery here. We have real global challenges here in the short term. We've got to navigate our way through them, but we have to do so without giving up all our economic gains. That's going to be our focus, and I think that we need to train that focus on that rather than on sort of technical debates about backward-looking data.
So the consumer confidence numbers are going to come out as well, and consumer confidence has been fairly dismal. Those numbers have just been flat-out bad for a couple months here, yet you are making the case the economy is actually pretty resilient and showing some strength in certain areas. So are people's feelings wrong? Are they getting it wrong about what's really happening?
No, absolutely not. Look, these are very uncertain times. And when you go and pull up at the gas station or go into the grocery store and see these high prices, they not only create hardship, but they create uncertainty for what things are going to be like in the future. That's why we have trained our focus on saying, what can we do practically to try to lower prices, make things more affordable for families while addressing inflation and maintaining the growth that we have in the economy?
One of the things, I'm so sorry to interrupt. I thought you were done with that thought. All I was going to say is one thing the president has talked about is a decision that
one of the things he can do is stop the green agenda. Another thing they could do is stop the wild, out-of-control spending. Did you hear this latest bill that Manchin just got on board with? It's the 2022 Inflation Reduction Act. Now, every act that Congress ever passes spends money. And where do they get this money? They print it. Folks, I'm telling you, this is absurdity at its utmost. So this BlackRock insider, the liberal world order guy himself, Brian Deese, who basically spilled the beans on the liberal order a couple weeks ago when he was talking about Americans who can't afford the high gas prices and literally laughing about it. You remember that? You remember that when he did that a few weeks ago? Here's a short clip on it.
Listen, we can't afford to pay $4.85 a gallon for months, if not years. This is just not sustainable.
Well, what you heard from the president today was a clear articulation of the stakes. This is about the future of the liberal world order, and we have to stand firm.
This is the foundation of the liberal world order. Remember, we heard the White House energy advisor say that this is an energy transition. Remember, we played that a little earlier in the show. I don't think I have it here. Yeah, right here.
Right now, we are witnessing the beginning of one of the most significant events in human history, the clean energy transition. It is long overdue, and it can't progress fast enough.
So we hear transition everywhere now, from sexuality and gender to energy to finance to politics. Everything's in transition. Transition, yeah, we're in transition, all right. The world's heading towards a 7 years of Jacob's trouble, so to speak, if you look at the Old Testament and everything that comes along with it. So I'm telling you, folks, get ready. Just like the gene therapy mRNA treatments are now vaccines, they've changed the definition of pandemic. They've changed the definition of so many words, changed the definition of what it means to have an XY chromosome and a XX chromosome. And now this game of name changing, you know, the George Orwell memory hole and newspeak and word speak, they're changing the definition of recession. What the Green New Deal and the New World Order has done is destroy the entire Western civilization's economy and culture. And it's really amazing that they haven't even been required or even asked to provide scientific proof for any of this, from fossil fuel usage to, you know, global warming, to the efficacy of the vaccine, to the soundness of their new digital currency. None of it. All they ever do is parrot Al Gore's and others' ridiculous claims as truth. Did you hear this one? The CDC's promoting secret sex chat rooms for kids hidden from their parents. This was published on July 25th, 2022, and I'm sorry, I don't have the source. Sometimes it prints white letters on my show notes, and I can't read it, so I apologize. But anyways, the Center for Disease Control is, for some strange reason, promoting a secret chat space designed for kids, specifically hidden from their parents. And this space is run by Planned Parenthood, of course. And it discusses sex, polyamorous relationships, the occult, sex change operations, and activism. And the secret chat room also mixes LGBT children with adults. Yes. Isn't that called predators? Doesn't law enforcement use that to entrap pedophiles? Platform has a name, and it's QChat Space. And it's being advertised by the CDC on their LGBT Health Youth Resource page. And the chat service describes itself as a community of LGBTQ plus teens and is available for the public for those ages 13 through 19. Folks, this is sick. There's no other word for it. This is sick. And now if you use the word predator out on Twitter, so if I posted that and said predator, I don't even know if I could get away posting that on Twitter right now. I'd be deplatformed. But I'm looking at my time, and I'm running out of time, and I have a lot to cover yet. And right now it's time for Ken's Corner, spelled with a K. Welcome to Ken's Corner, spelled with a K, where I'll share my life experiences to help you understand what's going on in this crazy, crazy world. So let's get started. So over the last several weeks, I've been talking about some of the ghosts and their philosophies that have come back to haunt us here in the 21st century. We talked about Hegel and his dialectic method, you know, problem, reaction, solution. We talked about Feuerbach, who said that God is dead and we've created him in our minds. And basically that's what Noah Yuval Harari's picked up on. And then this stinking thinking of Hegel and Feuerbach have infected people we know, like Marx with his communism and his entire flawed thinking concerning meritocracy and motivation for people to actually do something. And then that led to Darwin and his stinking thinking on evolution. So all of these people laid the foundation for a fifth ghost that haunts us today. And his name is Sigmund Freud. And he introduced the world to psychoanalysis. Now, he lived from 1856 to 1939. And let's say he was the one that put the final bow on the whole thing, the final touches on the evolutionary model. So Feuerbach said that we created the idea of God because of the insecurities that Hegel brought about by saying there are no absolutes. And folks, in any society, in any just moral society, there has to be absolutes. And when you get into this situational ethics of sorts, when you get into this destruction of truth, the prophet Isaiah, I believe it said, truth is fallen in the streets. When you get to the point where nothing is absolute, but everything is 50 shades of gray, so to speak, well, when you get into that kind of stinking thinking, you lose any kind of stable society. So then Freud goes on and asks, where do we get the idea of God from? What kind of God do we conjure up? Now, he wrote a book called Totems and Taboos. Actually, it's just a collection of essays, and maybe I'll get into that a little bit later. But he says that our idea of God comes from us, from our childhood father, and we conceive of God like we would conceive of our childhood father when we were children. Now, Freud goes on to teach that mankind's motivated chiefly by pleasure, and specifically by sexual pleasure or eroticism. And that's the way that every government in the world, all the way back to times before Jesus Christ, actually enslaved the people. They take away their true freedoms and give them, you know, assumed sexual freedom. And that's the snare, folks. Isn't that how Balak got the, and Jude talks about Balak. I think it's Balak, and how he actually got many of the young men of Israel to succumb to sexual temptation. He cursed them that way. This is not new, folks. Now, Freud wrongly reasoned that if mankind is repressed by society in his or her erotic urges, and if people fail to be allowed to fulfill their sexual and erotic desires, it may develop neurosis. And, you know, this whole area of psychotherapy and psychiatry and psychology, it's fraught with corruption, folks. Did you hear about the whole paper that came out this week showing that the serotonin levels do not correlate to depression, and the drugs to try to up serotonin levels actually are ineffective? I'm telling you, folks, it's all a lie. So he reasoned that if man's repressed in his sexuality and their urges aren't allowed to be fulfilled, they'll become neurotic. And that's the reason we have perversion and filth and debauchery. I can't even speak today. Excuse me. That's why we see all this in society. Well, you know, I think that's because the heart of man is deceitfully wicked. Now, when you give people a license to do that, you see more of it. That's the reason we have perversion and filth in society today. And it all roots back to this corrupt nature of man, the fallen nature of man, not to the extreme oppression that a just and moral culture tries to put on these perverted behaviors. So Freud's thesis that neurosis all is rooted in extreme repression, and that if we just have extreme permissiveness, it'll all go away. Well, how's that working out for us? How's that working out with our children who are now being groomed and indoctrinated? You know, today we're told not to repress our children. You know, you often hear the experts say this or the experts say that, and you don't want to warp that little thing. I'm telling you, that's all stinking thinking. The Bible says you have to train up a child, and that's different than teaching. You train a hunting dog, and it becomes a very good companion with you when you're out hunting quail or duck. And likewise, you have to train up your child. Now, let me tell you, my dad warped me with a belt on my butt, and today I'm grateful he did. I truly am. So if you take these things and put them all together, you're going to understand why we're in this mess we're in today. We have these ghosts haunting us, And they're the foundation of a lot of the garbage you hear coming out of the mouths of these people. Oh, and by the way, Sigmund Freud's Totem and Taboo, that's a series of essays I talked about where he attempts to explain this innate urge for humans to start religions. Well, he refers to that as totemism, and he says it's a way for communities to identify themselves by means of a, quote, sacred symbol, be it an animal or a plant or a force of nature, in particular, something important to deter in-group incest, which was supposedly, according to Freud, a major taboo. And we're going to hear a little later in Back to the Future, so was cannibalism. Now, of course, a lot of what Freud taught is now being contested. That's in the, you know, the top echelon of the psychology thinkers, and hasn't made it to the mainstream yet, just like Darwin's being questioned by a lot of the thinkers out there, but it hasn't made it. So to this day, Freud and Darwin both remain sacred holy texts in classrooms, both in high school and college alike. Now, we've also seen a similar attack in theology, and specifically in the study of the Bible and the ancient scriptures from which the Bible were derived. And that's known as modern textual criticism. And I think next week I want to talk a little bit about that. But right now, folks, we have to keep time for Back to the Future. Come on, where are you at? Back to the Future. This is the segment, folks. This is the segment where we take something old and bring it back to the future. So for today, let's wind the clock back, all the way back to 1981, when a French book titled L'Avenir de la Vie, The Future of Life, written by Michael Solomon and published, like I said, in 1981. Now, this was a collection of interviews he did. Now, Solomon was a journalist and a doctor, and he interviewed 20 scientists, including 7 Nobel Prize winners, and one of them was none other than Jacques Attali. Now, Attali was the advisor to the then Prime Minister of France, François Mitterrand. And in this interview, it becomes very clear that, quote unquote, they look down upon us, we the people, the useless eaters, you know, the great unwashed. They view us as a stain on the world, a virus, as Prince Andrew said, you know. He said, if I can come back, I'd like to come back as a virus. You know, and they have this blueprint for the future, okay? And in fact, it's exactly what they're doing right now and what I've been saying since early 2020. And I've told you, folks, it all began with this lab-engineered, media-manipulated coronavirus heist. And how many times do you hear me say that? Well, they used COVID-19 to change the world, both economically and politically. Now, what I'd like to do is read from you what's supposed to be an excerpt from this interview. And this was just on a gold website by one of the big contrarian economists. I'm sorry, I didn't put his source down, but just let me read this. And this, there's a reason I want to read this. In the future, it will be about finding a way to reduce population. We will start with the old, because as soon as he is over 60 or 65 years of age, man lives longer than he produces and costs society dearly. Then the weak, and then the useless, who do nothing for society, because they will be more and more of them, and especially finally the stupid ones. Euthanasia targeting these groups. Euthanasia will have an essential instrument of our future societies in all cases. Of course, we cannot execute people or set up camps. We'll get rid of it by making them believe it is for their own good. Too large a population and for the most part unnecessary. It is something economically too expensive. Socially, it will also be much better for human machine to come to a screeching halt rather than gradually deteriorating. We won't be able to give intelligence tests to millions and millions of people. Can you imagine? We will find something or cause it, a pandemic that targets certain people, a real economic crisis or not, a virus that will affect the old or the big. It doesn't matter. The weak will succumb to it. The fearful and the stupid will believe it and ask to be treated. We will have taken care to have planned the treatment, a treatment that will be the solution. The selection of idiots will thus be done by themselves, and they will go to the slaughterhouse on their own. So that's quoted as an interview by Solomon, Michael Solomon, of Jacques Attali back in 1981 in his book, The Future of Life. Now, wouldn't you know, and I'm not making this next comment up, folks, but wouldn't you know that this book is now out of print?
Shazam.
Yeah, I know, Gomer, it's coincidence, hey, but you can still find it in the Wayback Machine, okay? And it's written in French, okay? And let's face it, folks, what I just read to you is basically the current roadmap to tyranny, and it's well known, and we've covered it ad nauseum on the show, yet the mainstream media refuses to report the truth, and big tech, what's it they do? They censor it. And why? Because they all assume that they're going to be part of this, of sovereigns who are going to remain, and some of them will be. But remember, there's only going to be 8 million sovereigns worldwide. Why? That's what Gideon's saying, and that's what Bill Sweet's reporting. Bottom line, folks, society is nothing but a herd of sheep. And what do we know about sheep? They're stubborn, stupid, and selfish. And the Luciferians know this very, very well. They know that the majority will go to the slaughterhouse all on their own. Nature always calls the herd. You know, that's just the principle. Now, this is how it's all worked way back, even into biblical times. So these bad guys, the baddies, so to speak, they see themselves as elites, and they neither believe in God nor in nature, and they simply think they should redesign the world, and anything that's organic is flawed, and anything that inorganic and machine-made is great. But what did I tell you earlier on about that picture I took for the arts, man versus nature? And there's an oak tree growing out of the engine compartment of an old Ford pickup truck. We'll see who has the last laugh. So that gets me to what's actually going on here in their agenda. And quite honestly, folks, it's nothing other than making man into gods.
The only thing God managed to create are organic beings. All these trees and giraffes and humans, they are just organic. But we are now trying to create inorganic entities, inorganic life forms, cyborgs, artificial intelligence, and so forth. If we succeed, and there is a very good chance we will, then very soon we will be beyond the God of the Bible.
So that's their plan, folks. And I've been seeing these ideas floating around for a very long time. I've studied this for the past 35 years, and praise the Lord, we know the end of the story. They lose, and Jesus wins. So now let's apply this to something in the news. Why did I go all the way back to 1981? Well, people are picking this up, and they're putting out that as a direct quote. And then factcheck.afp.com comes out and says, posts falsely claim leading French economist Jacques Attali discusses depopulation in a book. So they go on to say, well, nobody said he did. He was interviewed for the book. And then they go on to say that he never said depopulation. And he didn't. In fact, this quote that I read is a good paraphrase. And how do I know that? Well, because I read the English translation of the entire interview. Yes, folks. And if you'd like a copy, email me at kdbeer1961@gmail.com, and you could decide for yourself. So, yes, the fact check was correct. Attali didn't write the book, but nobody said he did. And then furthermore, he never said depopulation. He never used that word. But he did essentially say everything else that was in that in some way or another. And he's basically parroting the talking points of the World Economic Forum and things you hear coming out of the mouth of Noah Yuval Harari, things like commoditizing childbearing so you can basically go and buy a child. He talked about mass formation psychosis. He called it compliance. He glorified suicide and euthanasia. And he did say that death should be sudden and not a decline. And he basically said we're moving from an energy to an information world. And then earlier on in that clip where I had the World Economic Forum spokesperson talk about bioengineering society, you know, engineering society and biology, and she talked about the body as a chassis. Well, he talks about cannibalism of the body. Now, not in the sense that you eat it because that's a totem, but in the sense that you replace it with machines. So a prosthetic arm, a prosthetic eye, a prosthetic heart. And we replace the defective parts of the bad old organic and we replace it with the inorganic. He even talked about cloning. The masses moving from productive contributors to consumers. And they, in and of themselves, will become nothing more than a commodity. I'm telling you, folks, you can't make this stuff. You cannot make it up. You can't. And it's so easy for people to be deceived. And let's face it, okay? Every honest parent's goal for their newborn child is to raise that child up to adulthood and prepare them for a world outside their home. And look at how crazy this world is, okay? So even those normies out there, those normies who ignorantly allow their children to get the jabs or to go to these government schools and become indoctrinated with CRT and CORE and LGBT craziness, they're doing that not because they hate their children. They're doing that because they're ignorant to the truth. Now, in a very similar manner, the Christians out there in general, including many of the leaders, are ignorant. Now, I just want to give a shout out to my pastor, Todd. He talked about this, about growing up this week and how St. Paul instructed us to do that in Ephesians chapter 4. So I picked up on it and I kind of modified it. So in a similar way that we're to raise up our children prepared to deal with the world, Christians need to grow up. And that includes many of the leaders that Paul listed in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 11. Apostles, prophets, evangelists, and pastors/teachers. So the bottom line is, as believers, we all need to grow up and stop drinking the milk of the word and start eating the meat of the word. We need to become spiritual and emotional and intellectual adults. And as believers, we're very negligent in this area. We're sheep led to slaughter, and we need to grow up. Now, as adults, and I'm not talking spiritually and emotionally and intellectually, I'm just talking about as adults, you know, people that have to maintain a household and go about and pay the bills and do all that. We've all probably had a moment when we come to realize that we're the ones responsible, and no one else is, and no one's going to bail us out. We had to grow up. I remember when that happened to me. I was, I think, a sophomore in college between my sophomore and junior years, and I had a small auto repair business. I mostly did body work. So I'd bring in cars, replace fenders, do some body work, sometimes light mechanical work, then either sell it or give it back to the customer. And I had this one station wagon, a silver station wagon, a Volkswagen that I had to get done. It was a Dasher. I remember it so clearly. And the driver's side fender was rusty and I had to replace it. I had a replacement fender, had to get it off, had to get things sanded down and primed and back to them because they were going on vacation that week. And it was early in the week and I had to have back to them, I think, by Thursday night. And I couldn't get this one bolt out and I didn't want to break it. And I thought, oh, I have to wait till my dad gets home. But I was looking at my schedule. I had it on the wall and I had to get all these things done or I wasn't going to have it back in time. And I realized at that moment that I couldn't wait for my dad to get home from work. I had to get that bolt out. And that's when I became an adult. I realized I can't keep counting on my dad. My dad taught me how to do this. Now I need to do it. And I call it waiting for dad. And maybe all of you have had that. Well, in a spiritual sense, in an intellectual sense, in an emotional sense, God wants each and every one of us as believers to grow into fruitful adults. Now think about a tree. A fruit tree. And think about the fruit that that fruit tree bears. Does that tree gain any benefit from the fruit that it bore? Well, no, it doesn't. That fruit's for the benefit of others or for the propagation of the species. So that fruit's doing all that, that tree's doing all that work to bear that fruit selflessly. And as we grow spiritually and as we grow intellectually and as we grow emotionally, we have to understand this concept of selflessness. Now, Jesus in a parable talked about the fig tree that he wanted to tear down or have ripped out and burned because it wasn't bearing any fruit. It was a three-year-old fruit tree. And the gardener said, no, let's put some manure around it and let's tend to it and let's give it some time. Well, likewise, You know, Jesus was trying to say, don't just throw out your Christian friend that doesn't understand. Work with them. Share the truth with them in love and instruct them so that they can grow up. So there's a lot of Christians out there, like that three-year-old unfruitful fig tree, that haven't been bearing fruit, and they're barely surviving. Do a self-assessment. Is that you? Are you barely getting by? Well, everyone who's ever lived, folks, has encountered the problem of being born into a big old bad world as a little dependent being that sooner or later has to become responsible and mature. And some do, and some don't. Now, Paul wrote about it in his letter to the Ephesians in chapter 4, and I just want to paraphrase verses 11 through 16. Now, these are the gifts of Christ to the church. The apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, and the pastors and teachers. Their responsibility is to equip God's people to do his work and to build up the church, the body of Christ. And this will continue until we come to such unity in our faith and knowledge of God's Son that we will be mature in the Lord, measuring up to the full and complete standard of Christ. Then we will no longer be immature like children. We won't be tossed and blown about by every wind of new teaching. We will not be influenced when people try to trick us with lies. Isn't that what they're doing, folks, with everything right now? So clever, they sound like the truth. I mean, even some of the conservative speakers, the gatekeepers that are in Gideon's list as sovereigns, isn't that what they're doing? Instead, we will speak the truth. That's you and me, folks, in love, growing in every way more and more like Christ, and I'm adding each and every day. Who is the head of his body, the church. He makes the whole body fit together perfectly. So you, me, and everybody else who believes need to fit together and function as one, folks, just like a precision team on a football field, you know, a drill team during halftime, just like any sports team that's functioning, like a ballet corps that's doing an incredible performance, just like the symphony. We all have to fit together and work together perfectly as each part does its own special work. It helps the other parts grow so that the whole body is healthy and growing and full of love. Folks, that's meant for us, the church, and that's how our life needs to be structured. And it needs to be structured to the point that we're organized together for good and godly growth. And then let me add this. These leaders that we talked about, you know, the prophets and the evangelists and the preachers and teachers and what have you. Paul tells us something about them. You know, these ministers of Christ and stewards of the mystery of God. In 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 1 and 2, he says, let a man so account of us as the ministers of Christ and stewards of the mystery of God. Moreover, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. So before they can do this teaching and preaching and instruction in the faith, they need to be found faithful. Now, you know, there's two different types of faith. There's the faith of Jesus Christ, which saves us, and there's the carnal faith that we're each given a measure of, and everybody has that. But you need to be made new in your faith. You need to receive the faith of Jesus Christ, which gives you the ability to put your hands up in the air and say, forsaking all, I trust him. And I've done countless messages on that, so I think you all know what I'm talking about. Excuse me for that cough. I should have shut my mic off. Now, let's amplify this idea of maturing as a child, becoming an adult. So verse 14 says that we need henceforth to no longer be children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the sleight of men and the cunning craftiness whereby they lie in wait to deceive. So in other words, we need to grow up and no longer be immature like children. And that way, we won't be tossed and blown by every new wind of teaching and lie that comes from the media concerning the death jab or the new money system or, you know, what we need to do to be free, okay? We won't be influenced when people like Big Pharma and the media and the government and the banks and even some of our most trusted alt media personalities, you know, those people that were on the list I read from Bill Sweet and Gideon, as they try to trick us with lies that are just so clever, they sound like the truth. Now, when Bill Sweet posted that yesterday, immediately I read the end of it, and I'd like to share this with you. I have it up right here. I read this, and this was at the end of the article, and this was a note from Gideon. The job of the gatekeeper, that's some of these people I listed from the conservative alt media. The job of the gatekeeper is to pull you in and draw you in, to say things that appeal to your sensibilities. They gain your trust. They are likable. And they are, folks. I mean, I enjoy listening to Mike Adams. He had a really good discourse last night on science and what physics is and what protons and electrons are. You know, I knew that. And that's from Kuhn's revolution of scientific revolution. I think I might do a little segment on that, too. But anyways, they gain our trust. They're likable. And they're not always wrong. In fact, they are right much of the time. And their key deception and utility they offer the cabal is to subtly omit or leave out truths that would fully empower you. That's we the people, folks, while giving you the impression they just gave you the whole story. If they've convinced you they just gave you all the truth, why would you look any further? Now, I'm on to the truth, folks, and I use these people just as a thermometer, so to speak, to get a temperature on the pulse of the freedom movement, the info war. I've known about Alex Jones for 30 years, folks. I've known about some of these people for decades. They're Pied Pipers. So I took a screenshot of that, and I replied to Bill Sweet, or Occam Labs, I guess. Yeah, it was Bill Sweet at Occam Labs. And I said, at the end of the article, there's this note from Gideon, the one I just read to you. And this has been my observation over 30 years with many of the quote-unquote gatekeepers. And this is the point right here, folks. They enable confirmation bias without ever empowering. They don't empower you, folks. So as children, we're gullible and accept whatever's taught to us as right or wrong. But as adults, we need to be able to spiritually discern the truth, because there's truth and there's lies. And the lies come from the father of lies, Satan himself, who also masquerades as Lucifer, the angel of light, as do his ministers of righteousness. So we have to understand that these people are out there. They're in our schools. They're in our media. They're in our governments. You know, and we euphemistically call these government schools public schools. Let's be honest. They're indoctrination centers. They brainwash rather than teach. They're brainwashing Common Core, CRT, gender identity, socialism. They're not teaching people the three R's. They're not doing that, folks. But we're instructed by St. Paul to speak the truth in love, and I'm paraphrasing this, so that we all may grow up into him, that's Jesus, in all things in which Jesus is the head, even Christ. So now let's apply that to your life and mine, okay? Think about your childhood. Who were some of the people in your lives that impacted you, that taught you? Even into my young adulthood, folks, one of them was William Cooper. He was my mentor, and he opened my eyes. Ralph Epperson was another one. There were three men I told you at PPG, Chet, Bill, and Bob, that led me to the gospel. So these are the people that St. Paul writes about here. And there's actually four types. And most people say the fivefold ministry. And they say apostles, prophets, evangelists, and pastors and teachers. Well, yes and no. You see, he gave us a list. He said there were apostles, and in the Greek, and there is D-E, prophets and D-E, evangelists and D-E, pastors and kaya, teachers. Now, kaya is a co-joint, meaning that it's one. So pastor teacher is actually a pastor teacher. And that's a primary particle, having a connection or link in some sense. It's a cumulative force, whereas those others, D, are just but, moreover, and, et cetera, et cetera. So the point I'm trying to make here is that a pastor also needs to be a teacher. And they can't be a teacher if they're not first found faithful. So what we have here, and it goes all the way to our church, and it's everywhere, these gatekeepers. We find them in the mega churches. We find them in the alt media. We find them in the government. We need to train up our children to become adults in this world. We need to grow up to become spiritual adults in this world. And I think that Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 6 through 9 sums it up so well. And these words which I command this day shall be in thine heart. that thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shall walk of them when thou sittest in thy house, and thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up, and thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine hand, and shall be frontlets between thine eyes, and thou shalt write them upon the posts of thy house and upon thy gates. Now, what's he talking about? The Word of God, folks. That's the way the Hebrews raised up their children, in the Word of God. And in that Word is found truth. The Word is truth, folks, and that's how we'll discern. So the purpose isn't to raise up children in your image, but in Christ's. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. When you embed the Word of God into your very being, you conform your image to the image of Christ. Now, the Bible says in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 15, but speaking the truth in love, may we grow up into him in all things, which is the head, even Christ. Now, none of us grew into perfection. None of us were mentored by perfect parents or by perfect teachers, okay? None. There were issues with all of us. There's all sorts of issues, and they get in the way, both generally and specifically. But the good news is that we can help each other as we continue to grow. So we fill in these voids as we were developing with love as we give the truth and just fill in those missing parts in our development. Now, you need two things to do that. You need grace and you need truth. So what I suggest we all do is that we come to terms with our failures. We all have them. None of us are perfect, folks. None of us. I'm not sitting here trying to pretend I am, because heaven knows I'm not. The point I'm trying to make is that we need to conform our minds to Christ, and then we can share in the mind of Christ, which is the wisdom and power of God. So if you were taught that failure isn't an option, you're going to never try anything new. I can't tell you how many times I've done things and failed. Failure isn't fatal, as my pastor said. Well, maybe not in skydiving, but in most instances, failure can be recovered from. And even in skydiving, usually failure is fatal, but not always. Remember, Jonathan Kleck survived a chute failure, and he did a free fall and lived to tell about it. But anyways, folks, I'm out of time, and I want to encourage you, in the words of Winston Churchill, to never give in. No, never, never.
Never give in. Never give in. Never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in, except to convictions of honor and good sense. Never yield to force. Never yield to the apparently overwhelming might of the enemy.
And remember, folks, that same power that rose Jesus from the grave, the Holy Spirit of God, the third person of the Trinity, he lives in you and me.
We're living in a very defining time in our generation, where fear is creeping in and the uncertainty of the unknown is everywhere.
I can see what is raging at my feet. I can feel the breath of those surrounding me. I can hear the sound of nations rising up. We will not be overtaken. We will not be overcome. I can walk.
There's an urgency like never before in my heart to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ, to show a world that looks like there is no hope that in Jesus alone you will find that hope and peace, to stand up in the midst of adversity and tribulation, and to show the unconditional love of our Savior while not shying away from speaking the truth of God's Word.
Yeah.
all cry out for change in our world, but many times we are left asking, how can I make a difference? What do I do next? The truth is, we can do nothing. In our own strength and our own power, we will fail. But Jesus himself said to the disciples, I leave with you my spirit. In Romans 8:11 it says, if the spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead dwells in you, will also give life to your mortal bodies through his spirit who dwells in you. Let's step out in his power. Let's proclaim the name of Jesus in boldness and love. And when the attacks come from all sides, walk in the understanding that greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world, because the enemy has been defeated and his victory is in Jesus. Oh,